Hello everybody and welcome to our webinar. We've got a great one going on today. Let me see if I can be smart enough to use the right computer here. Okay, this is going to be recorded and available for download, but we're not going to have slides. It's just the three charts from our guest presenters. Who are Yvonne, Joe, and Victor. So we'll have a couple of comments a little bit later on between Joe and Victor because we're doing something a little bit different there. But let's start with our first subject, Rudolf Steiner. Yvonne, go ahead and start with his bio that you've got, and when you start into the astrology, I'll move it to his chart, okay?
All right, thank you. And the bio of Rudolf Steiner, I've taken all the quotes from his autobiography, which is called The Story of My Life, which I did my dark half of the year paper on the first year. And Rudolf Steiner was born on February 25th, 1861, in what was now Croatia. He had a deep interest in childhood and everything mechanical. And at age 15, he taught himself analytical geometry, trigonometry, and differential calculus. He tutored his classmates and used the money to further his own education. He was a philosopher, literary scholar, educator, artist, playwright, social thinker, and esotericist. He spent his life teaching, tutoring, and writing books. Steiner's collected works make up 400 volumes, including his writings, 40 volumes, and over 6,000 of his lectures, plus his artistic work. From his own autobiography, he said, "The spiritual individuality of everyone was revealed to me. Dead men I followed further on their way into the spiritual world." This is a good example of his Scorpio ascendant opposite Pluto. He could see beneath the surface and understood at a deep level the complex world of death. He said, "I can say to you that the love for the truth has always been my guide. I have been much misunderstood and shall no doubt be much misunderstood in the future too. That lies in the very nature of my path." This could be an expression of his Piscean sun. "I never speak of anything spiritual that I do not know by the most direct spiritual experience. Of one thing I can assure you, I do not force myself. I put myself under no strain when I relate the truth of the spiritual life, just as I would relate the realities of this world of the senses." This sounds like a disciple speaking, also shades of both the Scorpio ascendant inner knowing and Leo on this MC, "I am that and that I am I," both fixed cross of the disciple. As his Jupiter is right on his MC within 1 minute and moving back retrograde, he truly did understand spiritual experiences and occultism personally and internally and helped the world to understand too via his prolific writings. Steiner was founder of numerous impulses for the renewal of human society, from the largest non-sectarian school movement in the world today, Waldorf Education, to the creation of new forms of organic agriculture, holistic medicine, pharmacology, and education for the developmentally handicapped. He was a pioneer in the realm of the arts and architecture, but his ideas have been also stimulated new approaches in banking and organization development. Rudolf Steiner Foundation of Social Finance, in 2004 they had $70 million in assets. They provide capital to enterprises addressing key issues in areas of food, agriculture, education, the arts, and ecological stewardship. Again, Jupiter is conjunct his MC, higher education possibilities for masses as his goal, something I'd say he worked on for many lifetimes to achieve, as his south node is 21 Cancer in the ninth house, semi-sextile is Jupiter, MC. The ninth house is spiritual integration, exploration, ageless wisdom. The MC stands for career, goals, development of spiritual responsibility. Hypothesized ray chart. Soul ray 2, the power to teach and illumine wisdom. He said, I came to know the importance of meditation for insight into the spiritual world. Meditation was a necessity of existence for my mental life. His personality ray, Ray 5, facility for math, used research and investigation. He had developed powers of analysis and discrimination. He said, I desire to create a spiritual natural science. His dilemma was, should I remain speechless? It was quite clear to me after a time that in coming before the public with spiritual knowledge, I should be doing the right thing. And he also states, I may state positively that I never allowed my insight into the spiritual world to become a disturbing factor when I was engaged in the endeavor to understand science as it was then developed. Mental Ray 4, love of beauty, creativity, musicality, and sympathy. He was an architect, a painter, and loved all cultural things. He said, I saw in the existence of art the entrance of the world of spirit within the world of sense. The true artist yields himself more or less consciously to the spirit. Emotional Ray 2. Ray 2 transforms emotionalism into intuitive wisdom. He was lonely in his spiritual beliefs. He loved people and was hurt when they criticized and misunderstood him about his spiritual science. Eventually, this is from Adina 1, I believe, eventually a life will come when the inner call to service will be stronger than the desire for sensuous experience. The disciple will then cut all non-essential ties in order to give all that he or she has in service. Steiner did give an awful lot in service. Both rulers of his ascendant are in his sixth house of service, directly opposite, yet I would say merged on the same axis as his ascendant, as would be the case for a disciple. Pluto represents the death of the personality ruler here and spiral up to the esoteric ruler of Mars. The physical etheric Ray 7. Characteristics of Ray 7 are a designer of beautiful forms, good posture, dignified. Steiner had a delicate and graceful body. He was an architect and designer of 17 buildings, including the first and second Gotheums in Dornach, Switzerland. I'm not sure about the pronunciation of that. Hemispheres, 8 north and 6 south. He's fairly balanced. The 8 shows an environment of introverted tendencies, recharging self primarily through quiet interludes. He has 6 in the east and 8 in the west. The larger number on the west side shows the environment of group-initiated activities and affiliations. He was president of the German Theosophical Society, appointed by Annie Besant, incidentally, and he started the Anthroposophical Society. Steiner stated that he lived in the spiritual world, and whenever interacting with people in the sense world, it was like stepping through a door, but once there, he was quite comfortable. His ascendant is in Scorpio, Ray 4, and Scorpio stands for test, trial, triumph, as the conflict of the duality overcomes desire and illusion. He had to overcome the sensitivity of his Piscean sun and often worried if he should remain mute about the spiritual world that he saw and knew. The exoteric ruler of Scorpio is Pluto, Ray 1, let Maya flourish and deception rule. People didn't believe the spiritual worlds that he saw, even as a child. This he really needed when Hitler declared a war on Steiner and said Steiner was an instrument of the devil and tried to kill him. He had to escape out of Germany. And this is an example of the lower expressions of Pluto demonstrated against him, not by him. The esoteric ruler of Scorpio is Mars. This is the ruler of his chart as a world disciple and confers the sixth ray related to his Piscean sun as well as Neptune in Pisces, the heart of the sun, as a disciple would relate to. The key phrase for Scorpio is, warrior am I, and from the battle I emerge triumphant. He had to be a warrior and have the courage not to remain mute about the spiritual world that he saw and knew. Scorpio in Ray 4 gives a fighting spirit and a capacity to grow psychologically and spiritually through constant crisis and struggle, And he had that in his life, being misunderstood and persecuted. But he also had the love of beauty and the capacity to create it that helped him overcome the struggles and crisis. I think he had all the strengths of Ray Four and no weaknesses as far as I can see. His wife's eulogy at the end of his autobiography eloquently explains this for us. She says, "His life, consecrated wholly to the sacrificial service of humanity, was requited with unspeakable hostility. His way of knowledge was transformed into a path of thorns, but he walked the whole way, and he mastered it for all humanity. He broke through the limits of knowledge. They are no longer there. Before us lies this road of knowledge in the crystal clarity of thoughts of which this book itself constitutes an example. He raised human understanding up to the spirit, permeated this understanding, and united it with the spiritual being of the cosmos. He died on March 30th, 1925, at age 64. His sun's sign is Pisces in the fourth house. Rays 2 and 6 come through Pisces. The evolutionary function of Pisces is to transform consciousness, which he did with 6,000 lectures, 40 books, and many institutions he founded for the renewal of human society. Some of the qualities of Pisces are oversensitivity, idealism, kindness, compassion. He overcame his shyness about speaking of what he saw and knew of the spiritual world. And he said, "I have made it clear that even in my childhood, I lived in the spiritual world as in that which was self-evident to me, but that I had to strive earnestly for everything which pertained to a knowledge of the outer world. For this reason, I am a man slow in development as to all aspects of the physical world." The esoteric key phrase of Pisces is, "I leave my father's house, and turning back, I say." And the exoteric ruler of Pisces is Neptune, which Ray 6, and Jupiter, Ray 2. Neptune is in his home sign of Pisces. Neptune is loosely conjunct his sun, and for a disciple is considered the heart of the sun. So all this is related to the working out of his personality in the work of the sun. Through the love of wisdom, Ray 2, the love of God is seen working out in a man's life. During this period, we find the intelligently creative or powerful man will come to the zenith of his personality life. I believe this is where Steiner was when he died, approaching or at the third initiation. He started Camp Hill Homes for Children and Adults with Developmental Disabilities, Waldorf Schools for Young Children, and he helped develop a curative therapy of flowing movement called Eurythmy, Dance Yoga. I believe these show a loving heart to serve humanity. The esoteric ruler of Pisces is Pluto, Ray 1. Pluto is in Taurus and is sextile his sun in Pisces and trines his earth in Virgo. So these are all good aspects and support each other. Pluto represents destruction of negativity and separateness and surrendering the personality to the soul through the first ray development of spiritual will. This links his personality, represented by the sun, back to his ascendant and soul purpose. Sun and ascendant are also trine, reinforcing the favorable benefit for him. And Pluto sextile his sun is an opportunity for transformation of his personality into the soul purpose. His moon is in Virgo in the 10th house. The moon represents the past and the instinctive way we learned to operate when we came into incarnation. The esoteric key phrase for Virgo, Virgo 2, Christ in you, the hope of glory. With the moon in Virgo, this is the esoteric key phrase that must be used to transform old patterns. He repaid with love the misunderstanding brought against him. The mantra is, I am the mother and the child. I, God, I matter, am. He had the ability to lovingly and wisely teach and help people achieve their potential and become whole. This was evidenced by his work as a tutor, teacher, writer, and healer. He healed a hydrocephalic boy who later became a physician. Stellia. Stellia are three or more planets all clustered in a sign or a house. They pinpoint emotional, reactional, and motivational areas by the specific sign or house involved. He has stellium in the 10th house, five different things, two of them retrograde. This is where his work and effort must be concentrated. Again, the 10th house is career, goals, and spiritual responsibility. This was his main focus in the second half of his life. He had a stellium in Virgo, key planets all with Saturn, Karma, conjunct his Earth, Dharma, and both opposite his Sun. Also the moon. This is a sign of service, transmitting the second and sixth rays, and this was his sole purpose, demonstrated in his 10th house of career goals, where he also had a stellium, Jupiter, Saturn, Earth, and the moon. So, we're down to aspects now, and I was talking to BL a little bit about this. He only has the one square, Sun, Uranus, and Saturn, and Uranus at the soul level heightens intuition, quickens the urge to change the established order, stimulates the aspiration to better human conditions, and fosters individuality within the group context. And Uranus in Gemini, it helps to make the individual with this placement an effective communicator for collective goodwill. So this was the Sun, Uranus, and Saturn. So this is what I found for that. So I will turn the aspects, he has a lot in opposition to, over to BL and Eva. Hard aspects, he has an opposition, Venus and Aquarius opposes his MC point in Leo. Chiron opposes Saturn. The Sun opposes the Earth. The Mercury in Pisces opposes Moon in Virgo. And the Sun opposes the descendant or Pluto. And he had a lot of soft aspects. And those are good things. The ascendant sextiles Saturn, the Sun sextiles Pluto. Pluto trines, North Node trines the Earth, Sun trines. I'm just going to let the Eva go in.
Yeah. I want to make one point here before Eva starts. We can categorize aspects as friendly or hard. The trines and sextiles are usually the friendly, easy ones. The squares and sometimes the oppositions can be considered hard. But it also has to do with the specific planets involved. And Pluto, Mars, and Saturn are actually considered hard planets. So a favorable aspect to a hard planet is just going to mitigate the hardness of that planet, whereas a hard aspect to a good planet won't be quite so hard. So the moral to this story is nothing is cut and dried. You have to look at everything in context. Okay, Eva, over to you.
Well, welcome everybody, and thank you very much, Yvonne. I really enjoyed hearing about Rudolf Steiner, and I learned a lot from your biography. I've had, you did send it to us earlier, so I had a chance to read it. And although his Anthroposophical Society ended up being the Waldorf schools that we're also familiar with, and I know a lot of children that went to that system. So he really contributed a lot to humanity, and that does speak to a fairly advanced disciple, an accepted disciple for sure, and like you say, maybe moving on towards his third initiation. So he did contribute a lot to society. And if we look at his chart, there's a lot here that we can see about the man and the kind of work that he did. Now, before I go into certain things that you've already mentioned and just to point them out, let's go back to his picture. BL, I'm having a hard time getting into it. There we go. One of the things I was very fortunate to be a part of is to learn from Michael a little bit about morphology. And morphology has to do with the the features of the face, sometimes even the body, and that is reflected, like everything else, it's energies that bring about manifestation. So it's reflected through our body and our faces, a lot of our rays, as well as a lot of our astrology. In some people, it's a lot more obvious than in other people. So I may not have the same ability, and believe me, I'm a novice at this. Michael would be the expert, and I'm just dabbling in this since the exposure to it. Certain things I can see, there's a lot of things I obviously cannot. But when we look at Rudolph here, besides the hard aspects that you refer to, there's a hardness to this man. We see that in his poise and the way he holds himself. There's that seventh ray, almost first ray like look to him. And yet, one of the things that I've learned is Pisces is usually seen in the eyes. There is a watery, moist kind of look around the eyes, and we do see that in his eyes, do we not? So that's something worth noting, that he does give us both the soft and the hard qualities in his face. Okay, we'll go back now to the chart. One more thing, Scorpio, and he's got the Scorpio rising. One of the features that we do look at that we see from Scorpio is a dimple in the chin, and he's got a dimple in his lower chin, does he not? So that's another Scorpio little feature. I'm trying to find my notes on it, and of course, now that I want to, I can't seem to locate them, so I'm just going by memory of what I remember when I did it. So okay, going back to his chart. You mentioned a lot of really good qualities and points here, and let's just reiterate that and show that in a just slightly different way, Yvonne. So you did mention that the rulers of his ascendant are both Pluto and Mars. And they are together, they are conjunct, which really, really emphasizes that ability of Scorpio. And Scorpio, as we know, can be quite the researcher, right? It can dig deep to try to bring things to light. And he had Mars there, which of course just gives it that momentum, that push, that desire. And it's in Taurus. It is in the sign of desire, that really, really strong desire to bring to light what he brought to light, right? And Pluto, again, it re-emphasizes that research, that digging deep, that wanting to bring things up to the surface. In Taurus is the sign of desire. So he had a lot of desire. It could also mean, as we know, emotionalism, solar plexus stuff, a lot of that. And listen, we're all disciples and we're still working on our personality. So he must have had a lot of, you know, that kind of emotional push and desire. And Taurus is also the sign of illumination. So we see that illumination that through his research that he was able to have the insight. It's also a sign of vision. And he did bring through his vision a tremendous amount to humanity. Now we move to his sun, which is in Pisces, and the esoteric ruler of his Pisces sun is also Pluto, which we just talked about. So again, the emphasis on Pluto here. His exoteric ruler of his Pisces sun is Neptune, right? And so Neptune is conjunct his Mercury, so his mind, and this can speak to a Buddhic monastic quality here, right? Buddhi, Pisces, and Neptune, and Mercury is actually quite the antichrona. Mercury is the messenger, but Mercury is also the concrete mind. So it could be the higher mind here, the Buddhic mind, and it finds itself in the fifth house, the house where the causal body is. This is the house of the soul. So it's interesting that we've got the Pluto and the Mars working together for that insight, for that vision, and then he's got these softer rays are the Buddhic qualities in the fifth house of the soul. So a lot of soul qualities here. Pisces, of course, is also a water sign, and that would give us also the ability of his psychism, his ability of his intuition to have that quality that he can then convey to humanity, like you said, Yvonne, with Uranus in Gemini in the eighth house, which is the Scorpio house. So you see how all of these little things are linked together, even though I'm not making the best case for it, but we see how that's linked together, right? And that is the apex of his T-square, is the Uranus in Gemini, which is the communication, it's the insights that he gets. It's in the Scorpio house where he has done a lot of research and a lot of investigation, and and it's linked, of course, and square to his sun, you know, so it'll come out through his personality. The other area to look at is up at the top, the 10th house, which you covered so well. He has Saturn there, and Saturn is in Virgo. Saturn is retrograde, so maybe it's not holding him back and limiting him as much as Saturn normally would. And it's in Virgo. It's in the sign of the healer, healing. It's in matter. So he did a lot of work in practical ways in bringing, whether it was health, agriculture, as you said, things of the earth to humanity. And Saturn is also a planet of the mind. So we can see how his mind was really engaged in a lot of the work that he did, bringing a lot of information to others, to humanity. It's in the 10th house, which means that it's dignified. It's in its home, way up there, and it is right beside Jupiter. Jupiter in Leo. So there's a large persona to this man. Even his MC is conjunct his Jupiter, and it is in Leo. Again, he was meant to stand out. He was meant to be the center, and then, you know, like the center with the sun is in the center and holds all these planets in its sphere of influence. So he was in the center of the society, in the center of the work that he did and the various schools, and then, you know, it all spread out. So we see that heart in the center of whatever field he was in. His moon is there as well, as is his earth, and that just reemphasizes yet again all the work that he did in matter and with the qualities of matter. So yeah, I mean, basically that's it. We could make things fit and look at his north node, and his north node is in Capricorn, and like we said once before to somebody else, the North Node is the destiny where you're going and where you're headed. So a Capricorn, we know, is the sign of initiation. I don't know. We can always say that maybe he was heading towards his, his transfiguration. And I'm just making that fit.
Eva?
Yes.
It's also in his third house, which is the work that he did, the books and everything. Yes. So I also wanted to point out that his son in the fourth and Chiron here, those could relate to the Waldorf school, setting up the work for the children, that he might have considered his own children and the work that he did there. What happens when the moon is opposite the sun? He was born during a full moon alignment. Mm-hmm. And you know what happens every month when we do the full moon meditations, we're getting the feel of that special alignment. Well, he was born with it. He was born slightly after it, but it was during that alignment. So I think that's one of the things that we see that came through for him. Also, Risa has added a comment. Hi, Risa, by the way, that says Saturn and Jupiter retro mean they do things differently than most people. And we can certainly say that for him, especially considering the time frame that he lived and that he did this. So I think those are all...
With a retrograde Jupiter, automatically his belief systems and his philosophy was different, different than the norm.
And internalized.
Yeah, absolutely.
And internalized. And I just want to correct one point that you said, Yvonne, and trust me, you're not the only one who's done this. The MC is not in the 10th house, so his stellium in the 10th is only four things. The MC is the cusp of the house. The ascendant is the cusp of the first house. So those aren't in those houses. They define what those houses are. I do them this way so it's easier to see where the four angles are, but, you know, it's... The MC is not in the 10th, the ascendant is not in the 1st, the nadir is not in the 4th, the descendant is not in the 7th. They're the cusp of those houses. So, okay.
One more thing before we leave, and that is the rays are very, very obvious here for him. We see his Venus, 5th ray, in Aquarius, 5th ray, right? 5th ray sign. So if he had a 5th ray personality, and many people do think he did, that is emphasized there as well. Leo doesn't really, well, it does give us the 5th ray. So we see the 5th ray yet again there as well with Jupiter in Leo. We also see his musicality and his artistic quality through Neptune, and usually Neptune in Pisces will give that to us. For a lot of people, we see Neptune as a planet there of musicality, and in the sensitive sign of Pisces. Also, we see Taurus, 4th ray, and Taurus also gives us many times the working with the hands within the arts, if you know what I mean. Hand molding, architecture, working with wood, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of creativity coming through Taurus as well. Okay, I think that's it, right?
Okay, one more thing. Who was it? Oh, Louise reminded me. Something I meant to bring up. You can see it, and Yvonne mentioned it, that Saturn was sextile and therefore friendly the ascendant, and that Pluto and Mars were sextile and friendly with the Sun and trine. Well, as you see, this forms a rectangle. What it actually forms is what we call a mystical rectangle, and or a mystic rectangle. And although that does not always connote a mystic, I think in his case it really does. You know, they tell you if it's associated with the water houses, it could be, or if it's associated with some of the mystical-like planets, that it could be. But I think it was all part and parcel of who he was, and it brought his sun and his ascendant together in this mystic rectangle, you know, the sun axis and the ascendant axis together, which shows that his personality was working towards soul goals, you know, and that he had the ability there that, you know, these are soft aspects, usually things that you've worked on in previous lives, and so it gives you that capacity, but you have to use it. You have to physically use it, and that's where we get this T-square in here that gives him the swift kick in the butt to pull this stuff out and actually use the benefits and the opportunities that come through the mystic rectangle. Okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. I didn't notice that mystic rectangle, nor did I know anything about it, so that's nice to know. Thank you.
Okay, so I think then we're ready to move on to door number two. Joe, are you ready?
Hi. Yes, and just I want you to note, I have kind of an annoying cough, so if you think you've lost me for a couple of seconds, it's because I've self-muted and you don't have to listen to my cough. I really thought this challenge of taking on looking at the chart of a famous person was quite interesting. I mentioned Annie Besant not because I had known much about her life, but I had read her study in consciousness, and I was fascinated by that and also her relationship with Krishnamurti. So to zero in on some things, and I'll have asked Eva to look at the physiognomy because there's some certain points that are really important. I'm not going to go into much about any of that. I felt with the limited time I should focus on her chart and what I saw with that. I took the task to reading her autobiography, which is a really important place for me to start when I was looking at the chart that I was initially sent, because she gives her birth time as 5:59 p.m. on October 1st, 1847 in London, England. And that was different from the initial chart that I received. So I asked BL to redo the chart with that in mind. I looked at the chart and, reading her autobiography, thought that it was really important to focus on the cardinality, the cardinal nature of the mode in this chart, and do the analysis in light of that and with trying to find the voice of that in her autobiography to share that with you. Because most of us, I think, we think of her really in terms of where she ended up. We read most about her work in theosophy. But I think it's really important, as I looked at this, I was really struck by the dynamic nature of that east-west axis, the natural house placement in this chart, the placement of the ruling planets, and how these cardinal signs work out in her life. So that's coupled with the balance in the quadrants. I thought it was interesting to look at the chart in that relation. So if I don't mention things that you would want to ask, please feel free to, I think the most critical analysis or most important analysis that you can find is actually on the Makara site. Michael Robbins did an analysis in a slightly rectified chart with the Aries ascendant, and it's very interesting to read. So she died in India in 1933 on September 20th, which interestingly is the cusp of Virgo and Libra. With her Libra sun, that might be an interesting thing for students to look at if they were to look at the transits in her chart and to truly try to rectify the time. So let's look at this natural house placement with the Aries ascendant on the first house cusp, the moon in Cancer, close to the nadir, Cancer at the fourth house cusp, the sun in Libra, conjunct or very close to the Libra cusp of the seventh house, and the midheaven or MC, the cusp at the 10th house in Capricorn. Looking first at the cardinal sign of Aries, the qualities there, we have to note that the ascendant does represent the spiritual purpose, or the point where the soul left off in the last life. And think of this in terms of the personality traits that will show up, and also the planets. So Uranus is opposing Mercury, and it's representative of intuition moving to inspiration. Pluto, we could think of there as power and transformation, the first ray, opposing Chiron. Chiron being the maverick, the teacher, the healer, the sage, between bridging between the personality and the soul. And this certainly played out in her life. She was a maverick in her 20s and 30s. There's a whole list of causes that she took on, and interestingly, I found a quotation from her autobiography that sort of encapsulates this. She said in 1875, "After much thought and self-analysis, I resolved to give myself wholly to propagandist work as a free thinker and a social reformer, and to use my tongue as well as my pen in the struggle." You know, the maverick, the teacher, really was the warrior at that point. When you look at Mars there in the first house, Mars is in Taurus, but it is in the first house of Aries. And I read someone had said that you could think of Mars as that initiating, that creative aspect, when it shows up in Taurus, to think of it as a seed that actually is planted and then emerges through the Earth. It's another interesting thing to think about Mars being retrograde there. And there are also two other planets that are retrograde, Uranus and Pluto. And I thought often as I was looking at this chart of the analogy that BL shared with us about the tap dancing, you know, moving backwards in the dance, and the oppositional forces that you kind of see there in the chart really speak to this, you know, tap dancing back and forth between the first and the seventh house, or the edge of the ascendant into the end of the sixth house. All that activity could speak a little bit to the healer aspect also of that Chiron. The south node is present. And this, of course, connotes using past experience to achieve personal integration. And if you look across the content of her life through all the decades, you could make a case that she's using the past experience that we might find actually in Cancer, conjunct Jupiter in the moon, you know, with the moon there, down at the nadir. And then we look to the top of the chart with Capricorn. You could begin to make a case about how, you know, this south node could be using past experience to achieve the personal integration over the course of her life. The Earth, as it naturally opposes the Sun, does indicate service to humanity, and this is definitely shown throughout her life with all the causes that she took on. The Aries stellium could indicate the mastery of the right use of the mind, will, power, an organization for higher purpose. If you look at the activities that she engaged in, the forces that she was involved with, changing societal norms and challenging things throughout her whole life, but particularly in the 20s, 30s, 40s, you really get a sense of that. Aries is seen as the birthplace of ideas, and when you think of the keynotes of Aries, you can certainly see that expressed in the cardinal nature of Aries, expressing the will to be and do, this challenging all the types of societal injustice that she did, working against religious forces, working for the rights of women, the match girls, the unions, her ability to unfold the power to manifest. She was a prolific writer throughout her life, an orator and a leader, and her entry into battle for the Lord from her 20s until her death. She left her Christian religious roots and really worked her way through to a theosophical point of a vantage point in terms of who is the Lord, what is the will. Arriving at unity through effort. You know, if you look at the things that she wrote, A Study in Consciousness at age 57, she wrote Occult Chemistry, A Chemist with Ledbetter at age 60, Karma at age 70, and Masters of Wisdom. You can get a sense of the progression. My impression in reading the selections of her writings is that in this life she made a definite shift from the sixth ray to the first ray expression, and from that to the second ray and fifth ray expression. So a sixth ray personality and to an expression of her second ray soul, and from a first ray force, or from a sixth ray force in her astral body, which was shown with sort of first ray political, was expressed in a first ray manner in a lot of ways, to a fifth ray expression, you know, honing that fifth ray mind. And at the end of her life, I could really see the difference in the way she expressed herself. So that second ray, fifth ray, came out at the end of A Study in Consciousness, when she writes that the union of the separate will with the one will for the helping of the world is the goal which seems to be more worthy of reaching after than aught the world can offer. So at that point, you know, with what all she tried to offer the world or society, she really came to a completely different point, you know, moving from that sixth ray to the second ray expression. Just to note, in terms of the rays, I would posit the second ray soul, the sixth ray personality, fifth ray mental body, sixth-ray emotional body and a seventh-ray physical etheric body. I'd also want to note that there could be the fourth-ray legacy ray that we could look at in relation to the moon. She had a great love of her Irish roots and heritage, and had the lilt of the Irish, you know, in the manner in which she approached at least the early part of her life. Moving right along, let's look at Cancer. Cancer at the nadir, which can indicate higher spiritual purpose or the ashram, with a moon there veiling Neptune possibly, or Uranus. If it veils Neptune, we look at Neptune in the 12th house. This would mean the visionary, the mystic, self-sacrificing, and that you could certainly see in her early life, the mystical orientation. She described herself, actually, as a very fantasy-oriented child and caught up in dreams and fantasy. In terms of Uranus, in the first house, this could be the mediator of the soul. Looking at Jupiter there in the fourth house, that's the planet of expansion and the second ray. And we really have to look at Cancer, as DK describes, as a mysterious sign in which the soul control esoterically obliterates the moon and all traces of the Neptunian life. So I'd be inclined to think of Neptune being veiled, because through the course of her life, you could find examples of what could be the obliteration of the moon, you know, in her experience. The upheaval and suffering that she had in relation to mothering. She lost custody of her children. She even, in her time of trying to continue to visit her children in her 20s, she writes, she said, "I found that my visits to daughter Mabel left Mabel in a continual state of longing and fretting for me. So after a painful struggle with myself, I resolved to give up the right of seeing them, feeling that thus only could I save them from constantly recurring conflict, destructive of all happiness and of all respect for one or other of the parents." So I thought that really resonated with that suffering in relation to mothering. I think it played out later in her life on a higher plane in relation to her relationship to Krishnamurti, which she did maintain throughout her life, but there was all that controversy around the fact of how Krishnamurti chose to live out his life versus the way that Theosophical Society had chosen, what they had chosen for him. So all these upheavals in life experience could become a mechanism for ashramic approach. She lives in people's memory, actually, as kind of an icon of Cancer, the world mother, in terms of the Theosophical Society in some ways, but also you could look to later, as we'll talk about in Capricorn, her relation to the home rule movement in India. So in Cancer, we see the Moon and Neptune as direct influences that are brought to bear, leading to the unfoldment of the form life and the emotional astral body. So exoterically, this brings limitations and handicaps. It's a sensitivity. There's astral-emotional polarization, which we definitely see in her early life. Physical well-being can be challenged. There are a couple of major health crises that she writes, not specifically about, but alludes to in her autobiography. One, interestingly, at age 30, which is around the Saturn return, and another one at age 41, 42, which was right before she met HPB face-to-face. And this also speaks to the law of rebirth. Cancer can connote a group rebirth, groups of souls that come into incarnation cyclically and together in order to further the plan. So at the end of her life, one could suggest that she has, in a way, built the lighted house and therein is dwelling. So let's look, I'm running out of time, but let's look quickly at Libra, perfection and partnership. Her life evolved as a series of partnerships. Each new movement or iteration of her social justice work evolved into another partnership. This is where we can actually see Venus in Libra, which actually relates to Ireland, the early years. And we have the planets Venus, the exoteric ruler of Venus. And I'd like, if you would, Eva, to talk to the sun falling in Libra, which may be of an interesting thing to look at in terms of her chart. We have Chiron, that's stellium, Libra as the balance and finding equilibrium where neither the soul or form dominates and duality can be known. It's a life of balancing, of careful weighing of values, and you see this, you know, consistently as she recounts her early life. We're told that the first real vision of the path can appear, the razor-edged path, and one could suggest that this is what came to her in her account of how she met HPB. HPB actually wrote about Besant, and that's what stimulated in an earlier point in Besant's life. HPB wrote, or Besant wrote first of HPB and the Theosophy, that there's a radical difference between mysticism of Theosophy and the scientific materialism of secularism, which was where she was at that point in her life. HPB responded, "For one so highly intellectual and keen to dogmatize and issue autocratic edicts after she has herself suffered so cruelly and undeservedly at the hands of blind bigotry and social prejudice in her lifelong struggle for freedom of thought, seems to say the least absurdly inconsistent." And I thought that was a particularly interesting way to characterize their first interchange. And then what it ended up to be in the way it's described, that their first meeting is described. Besant says that HPB unrolled the story of man, told of his origins and his destiny, and showed me the forces that went to the makings of man and his true relationship between his past, present, and future. So that seemed very telling to include that in terms of this lifelong process that she undertook to achieve some balance. Moving along, because there's so much that can be said, I'd like to conclude that section that with the esoteric keynote, and the word said, "Let choice be made, and I choose the way which leads between two great lines of force." And speaking back to the cardinality of this chart, that seems to totally resonate with the way Libra is expressed. It's almost that line across the middle of the chart appears as a dynamic opposition and then a sense of balance and equilibrium on that seesaw or the teeter-totter to achieve balance in order on the horizontal in order to move forward on the vertical. So let's look at Capricorn at the midheaven, which can speak to the third ray, and we'd have to look at the Earth there where it appears in the chart, and also look at Saturn in Pisces in the 12th house as representatives of that third ray energy. So lost am I in light supernal, and on that light I turn my back. We can only really speculate, I think, in terms of what the significance of this Capricorn midheaven is. Certainly Capricorn relates to Tibet and India, we're told, and to Delhi, also to the Hindu religion and culture. And also we can look at in her life the founding of the Home Rule movement and leadership in India in that regard. It's she ended up separating from Gandhi and others, but it was after, you know, she joined the Indian National Congress and was elected to president in the late 1917. You know, she was active in Indian politics and really entered into politics because she saw that India's independence was essential for the age-old wisdom to become a beacon in the whole world, as she expressed it. So as she, her assistant said at her, as a eulogy of her, that the Home Rule movement she organized spread all over India. There's so much more to say. You know, it's really a struggle when you try to summarize what you see in a chart. So focusing on the cardinal nature and the way that those aspects play out across the chart was what I chose to look at. It speaks to the fact that we really have so much to think of in terms of how the esoteric astrologers are now beginning to look at these charts. And it was a real interesting process, and I would encourage anyone who's interested in Besant and really furthering their knowledge of esoteric astrology to look at the transits and try to figure out more about this. So I'll turn it back to Eva and to BL, and thank you so much for providing me with your feedback as we prepare for this.
Thank you very much. This was well done. And again, we learn a lot about Annie, don't we? So before we look at her picture, everybody, you by now know the strong energies of Aries and the strong energies of Libra. Those are the predominant energies that we would say affect her. Let's look at her face and her picture, please. So one of the things you can say about Aries is that oftentimes the look of Aries appears right on the face. You can see it from the nose to the brow. Look at her. Even her hair looks like the glyph of Aries. Many times the eyebrows look like Aries' sign. So you see the eyebrows coming down from the nose. I'm looking at the middle picture. Just run your finger from the left to the right, and you see the Aries sign in her face and the way her hair is parted. Very, very Aries. Nose can be turned up slightly, very pugnacious, and she does have that look, does she not? Again, we see that Aries quality. The Libra, let's look at Libra. It is said that Librans, being of course the sign of equilibrium, is a well-proportioned combination of the face, and you see her face is well-proportioned and oftentimes very good-looking. It is said that many stars, movie stars, have Libra rising. There's a very good-looking face looking back at us, isn't there? What else can I say here about a Libra? Usually a straight nose. Her nose is relatively straight. It doesn't point down. It doesn't have a hook on it or a bend on it. So those are the main things I would say that when I look at her, this is what I see. I definitely see that Aries and Libran qualities in her face. Okay, now we can go to her astrology. All right, good things covered. Let's just look at a few more things. And Aries, ruler, Mars, right? Mars is in her first house. That's important. It's right there in her first house. It's the ruler of the ascendant and basically the ruler of her chart. It's retrograde, so it doesn't do quite the same, doesn't give off quite the same energy as it would if it wasn't retrograde. And it also is in Taurus. And as we said, Taurus is the sign of desire, great desire, and the sign of illumination too. Now, it falls in Taurus because it is the ruler of Scorpio, and it's opposite. It's not really falling, it's a detriment in Taurus. So when something is a detriment, it lessens its power. Something else needs to rise and ascend. Something in power needs to ascend. Maybe in her case, some of her astrality, some of her emotions is descending, because after all, she had a lot of sixth ray to her. She had her personality as sixth ray, and she had her emotions sixth ray. So there's a lot of astrality and emotional sixth ray energy to this woman. Also, don't forget, Mars conveys the sixth ray. Mars conveys the sixth ray, as does Aries, with all the planets in Aries conveying the sixth ray. So now the esoteric ruler of Aries is her Mercury, and her Mercury is in Libra. It's air, so a lot of mind there. And it is it's conjunct Venus, which is the exoteric ruler of her Libra sun. Venus is also retrograde. Venus, as we know, is fifth ray, and it's in an air sign. And not only that, it's in the seventh house. So it's dignified by being the ruler of her sun sign and being in the house that it normally would rule. So it also holds a very important position. It's also right on her descendant there, sitting right on her descendant. So Venus is an important planet in her life. Going back to Mercury, if you look at the degree of Mercury, it's 16 degree, and if you go to its opposite, it is Uranus, also at 16 degrees. So there's an exact opposition here. Mercury could be looked at the lower mind, Uranus is the higher mind, because Uranus is the higher octave of Mercury. We can definitely see here, lower mind, higher mind, that antikarana or that combination that she had going there for herself. Pluto. Pluto is also in Aries, and it could represent the cessation of old ideas or emotions. Pluto can also be considered as a mental planet. It's cerebral in its first impact. It affects us mentally, and then, of course, it brings in the emotions. Pluto is also the ruler of her Neptune, where she has the monadic ruler or the hierarchical ruler of her Libra Sun. Does that make sense? Do you follow me? So Pluto is the ruler of all the Pisces, where she has, I said Neptune, I meant to say Pisces, sorry, where she has Saturn. Saturn is sitting in Pisces, and Saturn is the hierarchical ruler of all that Libra, the Libra Sun. So she has that in Pisces, and it is retrograde as well. So again, the Saturn doesn't act quite the same way, and it is in a house that is not, doesn't have a cusp. It's an intercepted house. So that Pisces and Saturn and Pisces is intercepted. It's a very difficult combination at the best of times. And when it's intercepted, it makes it even more so. It can speak of fear, right? It's also in the 12th house, the house where fear can be. It can speak of no confidence in her early years. Her psychic life or her inner world could have been disturbed, or her inner world not obvious. And this could also speak about a door open to the astral plane, where there was a lot of fantasy, as you spoke of, Joe. She was, you know, she had the fantasy, maybe she had this dream life, and that's the 12th house, and that's could speak to Saturn in Pisces. That astral plane, I'm sure she had many visits there. Maybe she even retreated 12th house to the astral plane quite a lot.
Eva?
Saturn.
Eva? I think I would.
I'm sorry, say again.
Would you speak a little bit more to that? Because one of the interpretations you gave us of intercepted signs was that sometimes that dynamic of those signs wouldn't appear until, needed to be developed, or wouldn't appear until much later. And when I was looking at the research, she did so much psychic work with Ledbetter late in her life. I wonder if that could have been an expression of this.
Sure. It's first of all, it's the house of the 12th house is the house of Pisces. It's the sign. Pisces is the sign where you are going to have that ability to have psychism, right? She's got Neptune there as well. Neptune is the natural ruler of Pisces, and it's also in the 12th house. So that ability to have that psychism is very strong there within her. Yes, it's in Aquarius, it's in a different sign. It just means that she was able to concretize it, bring it down, and her fifth ray mind probably made it, you know, wrote about it. But she definitely would have that ability for psychism because of that 12th house. Now, don't forget, an intercepted sign just means that you've got to find a way to unlock it. And usually that unlocking can happen by the ruler of that intercepted house, which, or that intercepted sign, which in this case is Neptune. You see, that is the ruler of that sign. So I'm sure she was able to use that Neptune to unlock that sign, so that that sign became quite powerful for her. And I did not read her biography. I have not seen what Michael wrote about her. But from what the little bit that you did say, she obviously had lots of visits upon that astral plane where she was able to bring down a lot of stuff that she encountered there. Saturn also represents karma, and it is in the last sign, which is the Pisces, and it's in the last house, the 12th house. So to me, it represents an end of the cycle, an end of the cycle of a culmination of a lot of karma that has built up over lifetimes. Do you see what I'm saying? Because it is the 12th sign, it is the 12th house, and it is Saturn. So it's a culmination of a cycle, and that I can connect it with where I want to go next. It's down by the moon. The moon in Cancer. First of all, it's the ruler of Cancer, the moon, and the esoteric ruler of Cancer is Neptune. So there's a real strong connection with that 12th house again, and the moon in Cancer, which again is another signature. If you combine it with all that Piscean stuff of psychism, you know, that ability to enter into that world. That fourth house, the moon, and the moon in Cancer can speak to hereditary karma about family relationships. Now, you did mention she had trouble with her daughter. That's not an easy thing. Her permanent atoms would carry hereditary memory of all previous incarnations and family history. And that is represented right there, especially with Jupiter right beside that moon in Cancer in the fourth house. And so maybe there's an end to the cycle, this karmic cycle that she had with family, whether it's her Irish roots or whatever. She has obviously some karma that she was carrying around. Saturn in the 12th is representing maybe an end to that cycle. I don't know. I'm just speculating on the configuration there and what I see. Also, Jupiter. Jupiter's exalted in Cancer, so that speaks to something, doesn't it? Again, that combination is very powerful. It's very, very strong. And as we can see, this is a life of balance. She's got a grand cross, right? She's got all the, as you said, all the cardinal signs in there. So there's struggles continuously in her life. But they say if you can turn your squares to trines, you're working and you're progressing, and maybe she did. That's all I really wanted to highlight. She also has her Chiron in the house of relationships, and relationships, by the sound of it, was quite, you know, she had trouble there in her relationships, so she needed to find ways of making adjustments so that she could continue to relate properly. Whether with Krishnamurti, whether with the whole society, whether with her family, I don't know. So, BL, if you have anything you want to add?
I do. I just want to add something because we don't see it very often, and so I wanted to point it out. Her nodes are stationed. Typically, the movement of the nodes is always going to be retrograde, but they wobble a little bit, or the Earth wobbles a little bit. They all do. And so there's very few times, and I'm sorry, I don't know how often it happens, but it's rare, that the nodes stop in their 18-month cycle of moving backwards. And she's got them here. So what that basically meant was she was going to get that 9 degrees within a 3-day time span. Okay? So, and of course, the fact that her south node is conjunct her ascendant, to me tells me that she was bringing past soul life in and working on, as Joe told you, working on the Libra stuff, which is the North Node, and it's also the Sun, the personality aspect of it. So this was what she brought in from the past, and this was what she was working on as she was working on balancing that. You know, as Eva said, she has this cardinal cross, and we're talking about the modes here. This is the way she did things, the way she went out, you know, with that initiating activity that you've got going here. And the object is to balance the two axes of the cross, not to work with the extremes of any of the four signs, but to balance the two axes so that you're actually working more towards the inside of the cross in a balanced perspective. And I think we saw that in her life. So again, very, very nice presentation, Joe. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but they both mentioned it because we really drilled to them to please keep it short in their presentations. I mean, these are such wonderful people, you could go forever when you're talking about it. But we wanted to pull out the real key things in their charts, and that's what we've tried to do. As Joe mentioned, Joe didn't do a DHY paper, but she basically did the same thing. But as Joe mentioned, if you want to look more on Annie Besant, you can find it on Makara, where Michael has done his profiles of a whole bunch of famous people. For Rudolf Steiner and Lucille Cedarkrantz, Yvonne and Victor have both done DHY papers. Excellent DHY papers. I encourage you all to go look at them. They're on the Student Union, well, not Student Union, but they're under the Student Papers section where all the DHY papers, and most of you have had to do one or two in your lifetime, and will be doing many, many more as you continue on. So I encourage everybody to go look at the research that's available, the DHY papers for these people. Okay. I think we're ready to move on, right? So, I'm going to tell you something. Let me do this, and then I'll go back to her picture. We could not find a birth time for Lucille Cedarkrantz. So, without a birth time, there's a variety of things that you can do as an astrologer to try and look at the chart. The first thing we did was we picked a noon birth time. And that gets you, you know, the middle of the day. Okay? So the worst you are is 6 hours off, right? I'm sorry, 12 hours off, one way or the other. But that gets you pretty close. But because we don't have the ascendant, we don't have accurate houses. So we didn't want to muck up the works with a chart that addressed what we knew was a wrong ascendant and therefore wrong houses. So we did the next best thing, and we put the Sun on the first. So it gives us a feel of her houses, but they're all going to relate to the personality. They're all going to relate to the Sun because we're using the Sun on the first. So it's kind of, we look at them as derivative houses. Okay, this is the Sun's midheaven. This is the Sun's seventh house over here. But it let us work with the limited information that we had. So, with that little preamble, over to you, Victor.
Hello, everyone. Lucille was born on April 4th, 1921, in Bowmanville, Ontario, Canada. She is best known as the author of Nature of the Soul and Creative Thinking, among others. She was also known as the teacher of the New Thought Form Presentation of the Wisdom. It should be said that at the time of her writings of these first books, she was not aware of any similar teachings, including those of Alice Bailey or the Theosophical Society. She received instruction from a Master R, that's Master Rakosi, the current lord of civilization in the Ashram of Synthesis. The Ashram of Synthesis is made up of those from the first, second, and the seventh ray ashrams. In my paper on the subject, I had to address whether or not this was the truth. I concluded that it was. Without going through it here, there are several pieces of information that Arg gave us that was pertinent here. One is that she was a fourth degree initiate. In a communication with the group during a session in which she was bringing in R told her that she was a Chilo on the thread. Life purpose. Her purpose in this lifetime, which was in Lucille's words, quote, "I was told that I had come in to help with a shift of the wisdom teachings from the east to the west, from the focus in the Himalayas to a focus in the Rockies, and then I had five teachers who were Eastern masters. I was told that I was to organize groups and teach them to meditate to help prepare the American consciousness to be receptive to this teaching. It was then I took the Buddhist vow indicates that one works for the enlightenment of all sentient beings and will return in as many lifetimes as necessary to make this happen, which is just like doing it again in this lifetime," unquote. Her rayology. I hypothesized that she was a second-ray soul, a seventh-ray personality, a first-ray mind, a second-ray astral, and a seventh-ray physical body. Astrology-wise, we couldn't find her birth time. She was probably on either the fixed cross or the carbon cross, which means that she was going to be going counterclockwise around the astrological wheel. But without knowing her birth time, we couldn't establish the ascendant or the correct house to sign placements. The moon, which would indicate the past for those of a lesser degree, would indicate the past coming in this incarnation and would indicate the instinctive way we learned and operated when we first began our journey this time around. The moon's placement is also unknown for certain. The moon moved from Aquarius into Pisces about 8 or 9 a.m. on April the 4th, 1921. There is little effect of the moon on high initiates. In fact, the influence of the planets in general dramatically lessened with each successive initiation. What we do know is that Lucille had been forced into incarnation for the past three or so incarnations. As R told the group, it was like the monadic forces holding the soul's head underwater to make it drink. The one thing we know that over and over, R warns her that she needed to participate in life or she would suffer the consequences. R's words were, quote, "It is not possible, Lucille, to be of service to humanity if you're not part of that humanity when you serve. If you allow the concept of service to become the path of escape from life in all of its meanings, then you beglamour yourself to such a degree that that which you experienced in this incarnation is nothing in comparison to what you'll experience in the future." Unquote. She suffered greatly in the last 12 years of her life, and it was immediately following one of these warnings to her that she needed to participate in her life. Lucille's sun sign is Aries. Aries brings in the first and the seventh ray, and these would emphasize Lucille's energy in her makeup as well as the ashram under R's direction. Rulers of Aries, our exoteric ruler is Mars, bringing in the ray 6. Esoteric ruler is Mercury, bringing in ray 4. And hierarchical ruler, which would apply to Lucille, is Uranus, bringing in ray 7. Again, another emphasis of her ray energies. Some of the exoteric characteristics of Aries are forceful, initiating, willpower and drive, action and ambition. There is no doubt she had the will and power, plus the drive to go and do what was required to establish her centers as directed by R, but there was no personal ambition for herself. Her only purpose was to serve humanity. At this point, the personality would be under the control of the soul, and the related negative traits associated with the personality are largely under control. Those normally associated with Aries are arrogance, stubbornness, impulsiveness, confrontational attitude, and the tendency to leave projects unfinished were not something that those that knew her would say about her. She did have a mental focus and a strong will. Rays 1, virtues, strength, courage, steadfastness, truthfulness, and power to lead. Ray 1, vices, pride, ambition, willfulness, hardness, arrogance, desire to control others, obstinacy, and anger. None of these traits were in evidence in her nature, but there was a no-nonsense attitude in doing her assigned work and her teaching. Some might consider that as hardness or unfeeling, but if anything, it was a hardness on herself, and the unfeeling was what R was addressing in that she needed to be fully engaged in life. She kept herself apart from those she taught in that she had a job to do and she wanted to get on with it. She would pay the price for this later on. Virtues to be acquired with Ray 1, tenderness, humility, sympathy, tolerance, and patience. If one studies Master DK, when he was working with his disciples in Dyna 1 and Dyna 2, you will note that he too had a rather hard, or so it might seem, way about him when giving instruction. To say that was a lack of tenderness or a lack anything else, it is much the same when looking at the way Lucille dealt with her students. To say that there was a lack of development in virtues, I think one might be missing the point. I don't think is there any question that Lucille was on the wisdom side of the love's wisdom duality. If Lucille needed to balance anything, it would be that she needed to use the softer rays of 2, 4, and 6. Love and compassion might need to be stronger in expression. The Aries-Libra axis. The Earth is always opposite the Sun in place, which places it in Libra, the sign of balance. The Earth is the most grounded point in the natal chart. In Lucille's case, staying grounded in the light was her major problem, not only in this incarnation, but in three preceding ones preceding this one. It is for this reason and the fact that she refused to incarnate, but she was forced to do so by monadic forces, according to R. The esoteric purpose of the Aries-Libra axis is emerging mental control over the personality and establishing balance and soul control over the personality. Even though a fourth degree initiate has mastered the personality, he or she still has one and still has to be used or worked through while in relating to life as a human. Master R points this out, that as even a fifth degree initiate has to work through his own personality with its likes and preferences. This was something that actually surprised me. One thing I forgot to mention was that R told Lucille and the group that her previous incarnation she had a Ray 1 and a Ray 6 strong in her makeup. If we look at the moon again, and it indicating that the past, if she were born while the moon was in Pisces after the 9 a.m. birth, there would be a strong emphasis on Ray 2 and 6 through the sign and Ray 1 via Pluto, her hierarchical ruler. The other option is Aquarius, before 9 a.m., with Ray 5 and Uranus, Ray 7, as hierarchical ruler. In the rays on the astrology chart, we see that rays 1, 2, 6, and 7 play a greater part, Ray 3, 4, and 5 less so. The elements, I don't understand this really, but I understand that the fire part with Lucille, but with others, I don't really get that. She needs some grounding. And she needed to relate more via her feelings. The modes, this is another thing that really I'm not getting too much about. But in the modes, her mutable bar is strongest, which means flexibility in my mind. And she was either on the fixed cross or the cardinal cross. I don't understand how that applies to the chart either. So with that, I'll leave it over to Eva and VL. Thank you.
Okay, let me.
Thank you very much, Victor.
Let me
go
just.
Ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Let me just try and explain just a little bit about the modes. The cardinal cross and fixed cross and mutable cross can be, as you were alluding to, Victor, they can be a status of our place on the path. They can show, you know, whether we're mutable, which is aspirants, whether we're disciples, which is the fixed, or whether we're initiates, which is the cardinal. But that's different than the mode of operating that we see within a chart. And the chart itself cannot tell you what the status of the person is. You need, as an astrologer, to discern what their status is before you try working with their chart. And as you've done a good job there, Victor, you went to the hierarchical rulers because you thought she was working with them. I would say that we would have to work with, you know, the higher up you go, you still have the lower rulers in play as well as the higher rulers. And it's just a matter of where we really stand. With Lucille, I would be a little bit more conservative. She's very similar to the other two charts that we saw and the one we previously saw on Alice Bailey. And I personally place all of them around the same, working on or having just achieved their third initiation. But that's, you know, we agreed to disagree on that because we all have to make up our own minds on this. And we all have different levels of intuition working. So I'm not saying you're wrong, Victor. I may be as well, but I just wanted to point that out. I'm a little bit more conservative in that area. But that's what happens with the crosses, okay? So don't confuse the mode, the way of operating, whether we're direct and straightforward, whether we're stubborn as all get out and fixed, or whether we're mutable and everything changes on us. Okay, those are the three modes. That's the way that we operate, and that's completely different from the cross that person is on as far as where they fall along the path. Okay, so that's one thing. And then you also mentioned the nodes. Okay, the south node is usually the karmic past and baggage that we bring with us from all of our past lives, and the north node is the direction that we're trying to move in this life. And I think you pointed that out in your argument when you talked about her being mental, but she needed to find balance, and she needed to find the, she needed to relate to the physical side of things. And that's what Libra, that's what the seventh house, you know, finding the balance. That's what the north node, that's what the Dharma, all of those things point to that. And you said it in different words, Victor, but I think you did well with that. Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead, Eva.
With that, let me just ask you something, BL, because your technology on this is so far greater than mine. The nodes, are they not related to the moon? And depending on where the moon is at will depend where the nodes end up. And since we don't have a time of birth, we don't really know where her moon is?
Yes and no. The nodes are, in fact, related to the moon. But they're where the moon crosses the ecliptic. So they're going to be relatively stable. The moon is going to change degrees a little bit, but the nodes are going to be relatively stable. So they're more than likely going to be in the degree that they're on. It might change the minutes a little bit, but probably not the degrees. So those are going to be a little more stable than the actual moon is. And as Victor said, it could be as early as the later degrees. I think I looked it up somewhere, and it was like 29 degrees Aquarius, or as much as 7 Pisces, but that was the window that the moon would be in.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, again, Victor, you've offered a lot of interesting information about Lucille for those of us who may or may not be acquainted with her works, and she's part of that wisdom, the wisdom teachings. There's quite the organization, and a lot of people are followers of that. Some charts really jump out at you, and there's a lot to say, and some charts are not. I found that not having an ascendant and not being able to work with it quite the same way, I didn't have all that much to pull out in this chart. But what I did want to show here is that all of the three subjects that we've talked about thus far have Jupiter as a retrograde. All of them, every one of them, and each one of them was left quite a mark in society, did they not? So that says something about their philosophy, their belief system, their the way they looked at life, and each one of them was quite an esotericist, you know, weren't they? So just an interesting aside. So the ruler of her sun sign, her exoteric ruler is Mars, and like we said earlier in one of the other charts, Mars is in the sign of Taurus, which Taurus, as we know, is the most desirous of all the signs, but it's also the sign of illumination and vision. And its ruler, it's right next door, right beside it, it's Venus. And Venus is in Taurus, and so it's conjunct her Mars. Again, it's also retrograde. Again, it shows us that her what she valued and what she appreciated was slightly different. She was on a different line than the average person who has Venus direct. Now, Venus is also representative of fifth ray and also rules the Ajna center. So she may have had a lot of insight, a lot of that ability to see, maybe through the help of a Master R, and bring those teachings down to humanity in a concrete way, which again would give us that earth quality that she has there, plus all that earth that she has with Virgo. So we see she's got Saturn and Virgo, as did Rudolph, you know, and she's got Jupiter. So again, a lot of concretizing that which probably is so abstract. Her Mercury, which is the esoteric ruler of her sun sign, is in Pisces, and she has her Uranus there too, just so that we get the whole thing there. Like we said earlier, Pisces is very much the watery planet that does take us into the metaphysical, the occult, the psychic world. And maybe she had that ability, again, the Ajna was stimulated for her, and her ability to go into the metaphysical and then bring that down and concretize that with Saturn in Virgo. Yeah, and Jupiter there too, making it all very service-oriented. I believe you said she had some illnesses later on in life, and that would maybe speak to the 6th and 12th house axis. Whether this is where her sun is or not, right now it shows Saturn sitting in that 6th house, and maybe that's a good place for it. You know, maybe if she had some physical issues, Saturn in that 6th house would definitely speak to that.
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is her sun's house, so this is her personality house, and that Saturn in the 6th house in Virgo can be the karmic thing. Remember that Victor said that she was forced into incarnation because she had to deal with that? And that could all be tied with the, you know, the grounding of that and the bringing it all down into physical, and how she was forced to do that as a karmic thing. So again, we're talking about everything in relation to the sun or the personalities houses, but we still can glean a lot of information from that.
Well, do you have more to say? Because I think that's pretty well it. It's just that you see with all the Virgo that it's there's a lot of karma there and service. You know, she's got to serve in some capacity, does she not?
Yeah, I would say so. I would also point out that Chiron is conjunct the sun, and so again, you know, you're always pointing out that this is an adjustment is necessary, and this is a mental sign. Chiron is a sage and a mystic and the wounded healer, and everything we're doing here, we're basing on her personality. So I would just point that out. Now, hold on a minute. Eva, Louise has asked if you would speak to her morphology.
Yes, thank you. I was just getting to find my notes on that. Again, some faces show a lot more than others. Now, we know that she had an Aries sun. Do we see Aries in her face? Whoops, what happened there?
Sorry, did I lose you? No. There you go.
Okay, so do we see Aries in her face? Now, in the very first picture on the left, and if you look at those eyebrows and the nose, it almost does look as the glyph. Not so much later on in life, but certainly in her earlier years, I can see a little bit of Aries there. The nose is supposed to be turned up, but her nose is not turned up. So that's really all I can say about the Aries. Well, we saw that she had quite a bit of Virgo. What is there to say about Virgo here? The distance between the tip of the nose and the upper lip, it can be have a good distance, quite long. Now, again, the first two pictures don't show that. The third picture does. It does show a very long space on that upper lip. And the other thing is, see, the lips also can be thin and pursed, and hers look very thin. That's a Virgoan quality as well. The eyelids is another thing about Taurus. And we did say that she had Taurus, did we not, in Mars and Venus in Taurus, that they're droopy eyelids, heavy droopy eyelids. A little bit like when you think of the bull and you kind of look at those eyes, they many times Taurus rising or Taurian sun have a little bit of prominent big eyes with these kind of heavy droopy lids, and she doesn't have these big eyes, but she does have those heavy lids is what I would say, and they do droop down according to that ladder, the ladder picture. That's really all that I can pull out of all the information that I have about the various morphology. So Aries, Taurus, and Virgo basically is what I saw there. Pisces, she does not seem to have those Pisces eyes, which are the watery eyes, moist eyes. I don't see that. If anything, there's intensity in her eyes that speak almost to first ray, at least from that third picture. We can't see with the sunglasses. There's an intensity to her, and there's hard lines to her. So if you say she's a seventh, she has seventh ray and she has maybe first ray mental, you can almost see that. There's that intensity and almost sternness in her face.
And didn't you say a first ray legacy too, Victor?
Yeah, you can almost see that.
Yes, I did say that.
Sorry, okay. Okay. All right. Well, okay. I think we're to the point where, unless anybody has anything else to say, I think I've answered all the questions that popped up. I don't see any hands. Excellent presentations. These are such fascinating people. I just loved reading the information on them. So thank you, all three of you, for exposing these great people to us. And they had so many similarities in their chart, but they also had so much similarity in the work that they did and the impact that they had on the world with their particular work. So, with that said, is there anybody have anything else to say, any questions or anything? Or are we about ready to call this webinar finished? Oh. Next webinar, 14 March. No webinar in April because of the conference. We'll have one in May with presenters, and you know, three each in March and in May. We've already got them all lined up, and then in June we'll do a wrap up of this particular series. So
I think that's when we're planning to teach a little bit on the transits.
Yes, we are. We're not going to have any presenters other than Eva and I, and part of the wrap-up will be to discuss the transits and progressions. One of the things that I will do for all of you presenters is send you the quad wheel for your solar return for 2015, and a quad wheel for the other individuals that you might have presented on, so that as Eva and I go through what quad wheels are, what the transits are, what the progressions are, how you can look at them, as Joe was advocating that you do in your spare time, you know, you will be able to relate it to the things that you've already discussed on yourself and your with your solar return, which is your birthday for 2015. Okay, so anything else to? All right then. Thank you very much. I really appreciated the audience comments that we had, that we worked in there, and especially the hard work that Yvonne, Joe, and Victor did. Yes. Excellent presentations.
I learned a lot, guys. I really enjoyed, you know, expanding my knowledge about these three subjects that we were talking about today. And just looking at their astrology really helped me see how their life popped out, you know, in a lot of the charts. So thank you for that.
Okay. I'm ending the webinar now. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.